Welcome to American Patchwork and Quilting Radio, your one stop for creative inspiration. We have a terrific hour of ideas and tips for you today, so let's get to it. Here's your host, Pat Sloan.
Welcome to American Patchwork and Quilting's podcast. I'm your host, Pat Sloan, and we are sponsored by Moda Fabrics. You can visit Moda Fabrics online for all kinds of really neat downloads and free patterns. So when I first came across Shannon Shirley's quilts, it was at the Hampton Roads Quilt Show here in Virginia, and she, one of her pieces, which is called Miss Vicky, was hanging in a very prominent place of honor, and there was just an incredible story behind it. And since then, I've looked up Shannon's work, and I am just very excited to have her on here to talk about her quilt making. Thanks for being here, Shannon.
Oh, thank you for having me.
Tell me a little bit about your style. You've been quilting a long time.
Yes, I've been quilting 27 years, and one of the things that I love best about quilting is that we have such a wide variety of techniques and styles and endless fabrics and tools and things to work from. So for me, I have always been very eclectic. I loved to have access to all of those choices and use whatever happens to solve the quilt that I'm working on at that moment. I love using different techniques.
You know, what really drew me to is to your work. Once I, you know, sort of went out to your website once in a rabbit moon and started really looking around, is that a lot of your pieces have a story. Could you just tell me a little bit about the Miss Vicky quilt?
Yes, I have attended the Mid-Atlantic Quilt Festival for many years with my mom, and now it's become an annual trip where we stay the entire time of the show. And the first year that the Mid-Atlantic Quilt Festival was at the Hampton Roads Convention Center attached to the Embassy Suites, Miss Vicky was the omelet chef. And I met her, and she is just such an amazing lady and has a wonderful sense of humor and great stories to tell. And for me, it became a tradition to see her every morning of every Mid-Atlantic Quilt Festival. And we would often meet up later and chat and things. And I wanted to challenge myself to make a quilt with a face in it. And I had been staring at this picture I had of Miss Vicky and decided to try doing her.
You know, I just love the fact that it was somebody who is part of that quilt show, and that you had a friendship and you honored her, you know, for being there for everybody. That is just it is the neatest quilt. Now, what did you do with that? Do you still have it?
I do still have it, but last year when I spoke with Miss Vicky, she had told me she's hoping to open a restaurant down in the Hampton Roads area, and I've told her that the quilt can be hers to hang in the restaurant if she'd like, because when I first met her, I was just becoming a national teacher and needed larger quilts to show. So I told her her quilt had a job for a while. But she had said it was like getting an Oscar. She really really had quite a lot of fun with it.
That is so neat. Well, I will have to visit her restaurant if she does when she opens it. One of the things that I really like about the work that you've done, you've written several books, and I thought that we could talk just a little bit about your book on using children's artwork, because Shannon, that's a lot what a lot of people have. I mean, a lot of people, you know, their kids, their grandkids, their nieces, their nephews create adorable pieces that we, you know, we as quilters look at it and go, I need to put that in a quilt. Is that what happened to you? Were you kind of looking at it thinking, I need to put these in a quilt?
Actually, early on when I was just learning to quilt, I had three young daughters. So a way for me to entertain them was allowing them to paint or draw directly on the fabric. And then they would allow me to border it and quilt it, so it allowed me to enjoy my new hobby. But at some point along the line, they got tired of playing that game with me, but I was still inspired by their artwork. So at that time, I started recreating children's artwork, often the same size or in the same medium as they had created it in the first place. But over the years, I've really started to expand and use their artwork as a source of inspiration, and I enlarge it and combine multiple pieces together, and have really had just so much fun, because these pieces have always spoken to my heart. You know, they just make me smile.
That is really neat. I hadn't really thought about taking them, you know, and making them larger and doing some other things with it. Can I ask you one or two questions just about, you know, for somebody who has a child's artwork, do you ever, you know, to transfer something that was done on paper, or do you think it works best to have them start on fabric?
No, actually, there were times when my girls were younger that they might come home from school with a project that we were very fond of and wanted to turn it into an art quilt, mm-hmm. and I would go about tracing it onto the fabric, and sometimes my youngest daughter would want to repaint it herself or color it with permanent fabric markers, and other times she would want me to do that. So I've done it both ways.
When you traced it, did you, what kind of pen, or, you know, what was the best medium for tracing?
Well, when I'm drawing, I would use a very thin micron pen to get the look of a pencil outline if the original had been pencil, and that enabled us to paint it without that line really standing out. Now, if it was drawn in marker, sometimes I would use a heavier fabric marker because I was trying to recreate the same look. Mm-hmm. Now I make, I often use cutaway fusible applique when I'm wanting to recreate them in applique. So I'm tracing just the outline of each of the shapes onto the paperbacked fusible product.
Ah, great tips. Those are really, really good tips, because I think a lot of times people aren't thinking in advance, you know, they want to make this into a quilt. It's like you said, they bring it home from school, or it comes in the mail if you're grandma, and then all of a sudden you're like, I want to do something with this. Very successful. People can check out your book, Creating Children's Artwork Quilts. I want to switch gears a little bit. I want to talk to you because you've done a lot of quilt challenges. And I thought it'd be really, could you just tell me a little bit about why you love that?
Well, early on, I was very intimidated by the thought of a challenge. But mm-hmm. after I tried one or two small ones with my guild, they became more interesting to me. And actually, Cabin Branch Quilters Guild does an annual challenge that then hangs at the Mid-Atlantic Quilt Festival. They've been doing that since probably about 2004. Mm. And what I have often found is even when the challenge idea does not initially speak to me or interest me, mm-hmm. sometimes those are the more challenging quilts to come up with an idea. But I try to find some way to personally connect a personal story to the quilt, because then it helps me come up with more ideas. I just find that being able to connect personal stories gives me inspiration.
So when you do that, Shanna, do you write it down? Is that your preferred method, or do you sketch something to tell your story?
I work in all different manners. Sometimes, well, for instance, we had a challenge on a quilt inspired by a national park, and I decided to do four corners where the four states come together. Mm. And there was actually two photographs that inspired the quilt I made. One of them was of my brother laying with one arm and one leg in each of the four states. And then the other one was from the same trip, and he was hanging upside down from our Volkswagen camper from the bed up top, and he had this huge grin on his face and braces and his big black glasses and things. So for that particular piece, I was using those photographs and sketching ideas on paper to come up with the final idea. Sometimes I'm actually enlarging photographs, or I go online to view images. I'll Google something and just view hundreds of images for inspiration. If I can't imagine in my head what something looks like.
Yeah, a national park is an interesting one. I saw that go out into the community for a call to participate, and I thought, wow, that it can go so many ways. I just love your interpretation. That is really neat, and you have an amazing gallery on your website.
Yes, and I actually don't have as many quilts on there as I had on my earlier website because I need to get back to uploading more, but I am always adding additional quilts, new and old ones, because I often find after I've done a lecture, people want to be able to go back and reference it. So I'm still working on adding more.
Now, it is great. Everybody should visit Once in a Blue Moon and see Shannon's
Once
quilts.
Once in a Rabbit Moon.
I'm sorry. Once in a Rabbit Moon. Oh, sorry. I'd be sending you to somebody else's site. We don't want that. but you, I like that you put it in. You have like your show quilts and your challenge quilts. And, you know, you have them in categories, which is really nice since your work, varies like that. The people can see sort of your different styles.
Yeah.
So are you traveling to teach?
I do. I travel and do lectures and workshops for guilds. And this coming year, I'm really excited. Actually, I'm going to be teaching at Road to California in January. And then I'm also teaching at Quilting in Paradise for the Port St. Lucie Crazy Quilters, which is in early February of 2016. So, very excited about those. I'll be doing multiple workshops and lectures at both of those events. But regularly I travel, on the road typically and stop at various quilts. I just recently got back from Gloucester and Blacksburg and Floyd, Virginia. Met a lot of great ladies. I always enjoy being on the road.
Well, thank you so much for visiting with me, Shannon.
Thank you. I appreciate you having me.
So everybody can go out to onceinarabbitmoon.com. We'll be right back after the break.
Choose from more than 100 of your favorite patterns from American Patchwork and Quilting, Quilts and More, and Quilt Sampler, all available online. Buy downloadable patterns today at apqshop.com.
Like American Patchwork and Quilting on Facebook for daily quilting inspiration, tips, and giveaways. Find us at facebook.com/APQ Magazine. See our editors share their tips, ideas, and techniques by visiting allpeoplequilt.com and clicking on videos.
Here's a special offer just for radio listeners. Get 2 full years of American Patchwork and Quilting delivered right to your door for less than half the cost on the newsstand. You won't miss an issue that's packed with never-before-seen projects from top designers, complete materials lists for all projects, and easy-to-use pull-out patterns and quilting diagrams. Subscribe today online, and you'll also get a free downloadable pattern. Check it out. Go to allpeoplequilt.com.
Follow American Patchwork and Quilting on Pinterest to find ideas for bags, baby projects, pillowcases, storage and organization, and more. Visit Pinterest.com/APQ Magazine to join the fun.
Welcome back to American Patchwork and Quilting's podcast. I'm your host, Pat Sloan. Susan Marth of Susan Quilts is a author and a fabric designer, and she has a very small obsession with mini Dresden plates at the moment. And I'm really, really excited to talk about that because I want some pointers on how to do these adorable little projects that she's been creating. Hi, Susan. Thank you for being here.
Hi, Pat. Thanks for having me.
You know, I go out to your site and I'm looking at all of these quilts. I'm going, I want to make this one. They're so, so fun. I'm glad that you're designing all those Dresdens. Are you tired of them yet?
Oh, no, quite the opposite, actually. They're kind of addictive.
Yeah. Well, I bet your brain just starts thinking in Dresdens.
It is. And, you know, I have the ability to chain piece. And while you're chain piecing, your mind can wander because you don't really have to pay close attention to what you're doing. So before I finish one project, my brain's already thinking of other things to make with the same Dresdens.
So it's first, tell me about your background, because you have a background in architectural interior design, which I imagine must give you some interesting perspective on designing quilts.
Yeah, I think no matter what you learn, either consciously or subconsciously, you kind of use that. It becomes a part of you. So whether you realize it or not, you know, as I'm designing quilts, there's a balance thing going on, lights and darks and contrast, and I don't necessarily think of it in that way as I'm designing, but when you look back at things, I think that's why they're pleasing, because they're balanced and, you know, colors go together and flow, and that's probably my favorite thing is choosing the fabrics to use in a project.
Mm-hmm. Don't we quilt for fabric, you know, to be honest? That's like...
Yes, I tell a lot of people that's the only reason I sew is so that my family doesn't drown in the piles of fabric around the house. I have to use it up somehow.
That's a good reason. That's a good reason. When did you start messing around with Dresden plates?
Oh, that's a good question. I've made the typical 12-inch Dresden plates several times during quilting, but mm-hmm. a couple years ago I decided I like the Dresden, but I'd like it at a smaller scale. So I designed the 9-inch finished block template. And I made several patterns with those. And then last year I decided, you know, I wonder what would happen if I tried to shrink that even more. And so I made a 4.5-inch finished block size so that it would complement the 9-inch.
Mm-hmm.
So I started making those, and that's kind of where I went down the rabbit hole and haven't stopped yet.
So you have what you call a tiny Dresden and a mini Dresden.
Right.
So those are the two
differences. The tiny makes the 4.5-inch finished block.
Mm-hmm.
And then you can set two of those together, and they will butt up nicely to the 9-inch finished, which is the mini Dresden.
Okay.
So I design patterns that use one or the other template, and then mm-hmm. I'm also designing more patterns that actually incorporate both the templates so you can use them together.
Mm-hmm. That would be like your pattern called Dresden Heaven.
Yes.
Yeah. That's...
Some people are calling that other names. But when you get finished with a quilt and just stand back and look at it, it's one of the prettiest things I've ever made. So
yeah.
You have to think past the work that it's going to take you to make the quilt and just think of how awesome it's going to be when you're finished.
I just think that's a gorgeous quilt. I love the different play on I love how you're taking the fabric placement in the Dresdens and doing them a little different so that it gives different effects. It's not like your standard blades. I wanted to get some tips from you on working with these small pieces, because a lot of people don't work with shapes this tiny. And so what can we do to be successful with small Dresdens?
Well, one of the things I want people to know is everything that I make is easy. It used to be I could say everything I make is quick and easy, but the Dresden plates aren't necessarily quick, but they are easy. It's all straight seams when you're sewing the petals together, your scant quarter of an inch. And one of the tips that I tell everyone, and it's in, you know, if you buy the tiny and the mini templates, there are instructions to make Dresden plates on the back with that pattern.
Mm-hmm.
So on all of those, I tell you, if you use the base or spray for starching your fabric before you start, that mm-hmm. helps get that point nice and pointed. I have tips that show you how to trim out most of that seam allowance for the first seam that makes the point.
Mm-hmm.
Then, you know, if you use one of the purple things, you know what those little tools are,
right.
You can poke that point out so it's nice and pointed. There are several glues. I really like the Roxanne glue based it. So when you're getting ready to applique the block together, the glue comes out in a really tiny stream, so you don't have to worry about it being too wet. It dries quick, and then when you're getting ready to pull your paper template out of that center circle, Mm-hmm. It comes out real easily because there's not a lot of glue there.
Right. Okay.
So just little tools and stuff that you can get at your local quilt shop. It just makes everything, you know, crisp and pointed and sharp. And then for stitching it down, I use a small, really small length and a small width of a blind hem stitch. So you have to get really close to that quilt. And even when people come up to see the quilt, they assume that I've hand applicated it down.
Mm-hmm.
But you use matching thread and a really tiny blind hem stitch, and it looks like a hand stitch because it just kind of fades into the fabric. It helps if you use a busier fabric too.
Right. Yeah, the solids would be like, you know, prints are good.
Prints are good. But yeah, even with solid prints, because some of the fabrics read as a solid, mm-hmm. if you use matching thread, you can hardly see those stitches because they're so small.
Mm-hmm. Can you describe the blind hem stitch so that people know what you're talking about?
I'm sorry, the what?
The stitch that you're using.
Oh, the blind hem stitch.
Yeah.
It's actually on most sewing machines. It's a really old stitch, and it will take like three stitches forward, and then it'll take a tiny zigzag stitch to the left. And then it'll come back out to the edge, and you'll take three stitches forward, and then it'll take another little bite to the left. So if you make the stitches really narrow, the width of your stitch that goes out to the left, if you make that really small, it will just catch a couple of threads on the piece that you're appliquing down. So it's barely visible to the naked eye.
And are you pulling that, the little bite part, are they pretty close together since the dresdens are small?
You mean block to block?
No, the stitch itself. So you're taking the stitch, like the distance between the bite, the straight part of the number
would
be smaller.
Yes, the length is very short and mm-hmm. the width is really short.
Yeah, okay. Because you don't want to have big gaps between each of those stitches.
Right. Right. Yeah. And unfortunately, some people's machines don't let you alter that blind hem stitch.
Mm.
You know, it's one stitch and it won't let you alter the width or the length when you set your machine to that stitch. Mm-hmm. So for those people, I recommend just using the smallest zigzag that your machine will let you stitch. That's a good way.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Yeah.
And, you know, then there are some people out there that absolutely love handwork and they want to do it all by hand. So, you know, it's a nice take-along project, too, if you like handwork.
Yeah,
I personally prefer doing things by machine because it's faster and I can move on to the next project.
Right. Your brain's probably going, what's the next one? I got to get this
exactly.
one done. Yeah.
Exactly.
So the other day on my Facebook group, so I think somebody shared, well, I know they shared it. They shared your little monthly Dresdens of the bats. The bats are... just, they're so cute.
Thank you. Well, you know, this is one of those things where my brain started going crazy as I was, you know, kind of doing the chain piecing of other blocks. And as I'm putting a couple of them together, I'm thinking, well, you know, that three together, you know, I could probably make a clover out of that.
Mm-hmm.
So that's what March is. And then my brain started going further and went, oh, well, I could do a snowflake for January. So after I thought about three or four of them, I thought, okay, well, if I'm going to do this, I need something for each month. So the bats just kind of came out of that. What can I do for October?
Yeah.
And the bats just kind of came.
Yeah. They're just so cute. Everybody can go to Suzan Quilts. It's SuzanQuilts.com. And you can go see all the month ones. They're just so adorable. Well, I want to have you tell me before we end about your fabric line. Who's it with? What's it called? Where can we find it?
It's with Red Rooster.
Yay.
And it's called Vintage Play. So it's a children's line, but there are also solids and some cute prints that you could use on non-children projects if you wanted to. Mm-hmm. So it's basically primary colors, red, yellow, blue, plus green and black. So there's a panel with children playing, nine different blocks of kids playing, and then lots of fabrics that read as tone on tone, so it's easy to accommodate for applique projects. Boy or girl oriented, I think.
Yeah, it's very, very cute. So I like it. I like it. So tell me, I have a question for you. When you go to a quilt show, Susan, what attracts you? Are you like interested in the quilts? Are you interested in what's, you know, shops are selling?
I typically look at the quilts first because I'm always just very intrigued of how some people can imagine quilts. I'm always amazed at the people that can do all the thread work with quilts because that's something I don't do.
Mm-hmm.
I'm always amazed how that can make a beautiful picture out of doing nothing but sewing thread onto fabric. So those are probably some of my favorites to look at quilt shows because it's something totally out of my box.
Mm-hmm.
And then my second favorite thing to do is to shop the vendors. It's always fun to see things that our local quilt shops don't carry.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. We have about 30 seconds. When you shop, do you go in with a list or are you just sort of serendipitous shopping?
Oh, no, no, no. I never go in with a list. What's the fun in that?
Yeah, exactly.
No, I'm always looking for something that's going to intrigue me, something that I haven't seen before. So that's my favorite thing.
Yeah. Will you buy some fabrics maybe that you don't, you know, you've never seen before? That'd be what I would go for.
Sure. Sure. Yeah. My family just got back from the Smoky Mountains and I was able to take in a couple of quilt shops there. And I came home with fabric that I didn't need, but it's pretty, and I hadn't seen it before. So, of course, I had to buy a couple of yards, and I'll be incorporating it into a project down the road.
There you go. Well,
can
Susan,
never have too much fabric.
This has been so much fun. Thank you for being here, Susan.
Thanks for having me, Pat.
We'll be right back after the break.
Boost your sewing skills from start to finish with daily tips from the editors of American Patchwork and Quilting. Visit tips.allpeoplequilt.com for inspiration. This quilting tip brought to you by Moda Fabrics. Visit modafabrics.com or your local quilt shop to see the latest fabric collections. Set yourself up to stitch a little every day. When you finish stitching, before putting everything away, rethread your needle and take the first stitch. Then the next time you pull out your project, you'll be ready to sit down and start stitching.
Hi, I'm Linda Augsburg. Join me in 2015 for a brand new video series called Show Me How, brought to you by Baby Lock. Each month, I'll show you how to complete a simple project from start to finish. Learn new techniques, see tips, and sew a great project. Visit allpeoplequilt.com/videos to watch.
Take an ultimate shop hop tour of 11 top quilt shops. You'll find them all in the current issue of Quilt Sampler, available now at your local quilt shop or on newsstands.
Welcome back to American Patchwork and Quilting's podcast. I'm your host, Pat Sloan. I am really, really excited because Mary Abreu of Confessions of a Craft Addict is joining me, and she is such a wealth of knowledge, and we're going to talk about something really fun that she does. So hi, Mary. How are you?
I'm great, Pat. How are you doing today?
I am wonderful, and I want to tell you, you must have the job that every quilter dreams of having because you work in a quilt shop and design and sew for fun.
I do. It's awesome. It's a great thing. My one of my best friends owns a store in the Atlanta area. It's in Decatur, Georgia, called In Town Quilters, and I started out teaching there, and have over time as my youngest went off to school, I started working there, and it's a great thing. You get to be surrounded by all this wonderful fabric and get to meet people from all over the world. Our proximity to Atlanta and Emory and the CDC, we have a lot of people who come in from all over the world because they're visiting, and so I get to meet people, quilters and sewers from all around the world, and it's just so much fun and so inspiring, and you know, and a lot of fabric, and it's awesome.
I've kind of helped out a friend every once in a while in her shop, and I taught in the shop, but I didn't really work in the shop. But that has just got to be such an incredible high every day. You know, I mean, every job has its issues, but wow, to get to see all the new stuff, and yeah.
Oh yeah, it's it's really fun. I mean, I was a journalist before I had my third child and stayed home, and I love the creativity that goes with being in a place that is involved in making things. Mm-hmm. And I, you know, we get to see fabric, and I get to, and there's so much fabric, and you don't realize even shopping at a quilt shop or even working there until you start seeing what's out there. And you've been to market, so you know yeah. how much fabric there really is out there and how little you see. And it's just an amazing, fun thing, but, you know, a little dangerous too. I have a really big stash, so.
Yeah.
But like I tell people, like, oh, you know, we'll ask people, so what are you working on? They're like, I'm just kidding. I'm like, no, this is a judgment-free zone, believe me.
Yeah, right.
We're not judging you.
Now, you've also written two books. One yes. is published, and the other one's coming out?
Yes. My first book, Little Girls Big Style, was published by Stash Books, which is an imprint of C&T Publishing, in November of 2010. My next book, Modern Style for Girls, is also with Stash, and it'll be out this October. It is sort of their companion book to some degree. The first book, Little Girls Big Style, is clothing for girls sizes 2 to 6. Mm-hmm. Modern Style for Girls picks up sort of at the end of that, and it's for sizes 7 to 12, and it's sort of... It's a sequel in a way, but stylistically it's a little bit different. So the younger sewing, it's very age appropriate. So the stuff from 2 to 6 is very young and youthful and girly and lots of ruffles. And the modern style for girls is really more for that tween set where they get a little, you know, they don't want ruffles on everything, which is really, I write about in the introduction of the book. My daughter.
Yeah.
Kind of got tired of ruffles, and she's like, you have to put ruffles on everything. And so I'm like, yes, I do. Have you not seen anything I've made? And so this is, it's really fun to have this thing that I've made kind of almost with my daughter, mm-hmm. who sort of inspired both books. And it's a lot of fun to sort of see how they've grown up within that.
Now, you also, besides sewing for your own children and writing these books, you teach children sewing.
Yes.
Yeah. So
I do. I teach kids and adults. I teach adult classes during the school year primarily, and then during the summer mm-hmm. I do summer camps where I work with kids for a week, and it is exhausting and invigorating at the same time. But it's really so fun is that kids I just finished my most recent beginning sewing class Saturday with my adult students, and the biggest mm-hmm. difference between adults and kids is that kids are kind of fearless. They're sort of used to making mistakes.
Mm-hmm.
So when they make a mistake, it's just kind of funny.
Yeah.
They're just like, oh, ha, I have to rip this out for the fourth time.
Right.
and it's a lot of fun. And teaching camp for a week is just amazing. They get so excited about what they're making and seeing each project come together, and they love every aspect of it, and it's really so, it just gets you so energized every day. But you know, there's a lot of coffee consumed too, trying to keep up with that.
A lot of energy going on, I'm sure. I'm not used to having a bunch of kids around, so I know I would be exhausted. I'd be drinking lots of coffee. That's to keep up.
I do. There's a great deal of coffee consumed over the course of those 10 days each summer.
Do you have one tip, Mary, on what, you know, if somebody has a child that they want to teach, no matter what age, but they haven't really done anything yet sewing-wise, what's a good project for them to start with?
Really and truly, some of it does depend on the age, because mm-hmm. I find that some folks will say, well, you can start teaching them on a machine at like 5 or 6. My camps are really geared for 11 and up, and I've had as young as 9, but mm-hmm. there's a really big difference in the motor control that you have mm-hmm. from that happens from age 9 to 10 to 11. And when you think about, you know, we kind of take for granted what we're doing, you know, with our eyes and our hands and our feet all at once, but there's nothing else that kids do that's really exactly like this. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, for the younger kids, I just give them fabric and needle and threads and just let them play. I've had kids as young as six use things like the Clover Kanzashi tool and the Clover yo-yo makers, and they will just go to town and make those, and they're happy to sew them together and make bracelets and headbands or, you know, pins and things like that. And then when they get a little bit older and just start playing with the machine, just sewing bits of fabric together and making pillows is something that's so easy. And then by the time they're 10 or 11, I love having them do things like pillowcases, you know, the magic pillowcase pattern, the conquer cancer pillowcases. Mm-hmm. I've had a lot of my kids do those for service hours. Just really simple pajama pants that are, one piece legs are so easy for them, and it doesn't require a lot of fitting sort of things that are, mm-hmm. That can be a challenge. And then we kind of go from there into making tote bags and just really, it's really more about just letting them do it, mm-hmm. and not worrying about how perfect it looks, because for them, right. they see it through different eyes. And that it's really more about them being happy with it and loving it than about it looking like something we as adults would make.
Right. That is the best tip. That is the best. Don't discourage. Just let them, if they're happy, you know, you're always going to have that one really detailed kid, right, that's going to take it
yep.
apart.
Oh, but, yeah.
Yeah.
But for the most part, they just want to have fun, and they just want to enjoy it. And you have to not project your ideas and expectations on it, because mm-hmm. you're an adult. And mm-hmm. you have to, you know, you have more, you know, if you've been sewing, right. you have a completely different set of skills than they do. Just let them have fun.
Well, I want to switch gears. That was a great tip. Okay. I want to switch gears because I want to get this in on it, talking about your sort of you are so talented. I mean, I could have you on every month. I mean, because you have so much knowledge. But what really fascinated me when you and I were first talking was that your hobby of costume designing, or maybe it's like your part-time job. I'm not sure what you call it. But you do this costume designing, and then you also attend these events where everybody dresses up and they're all adults. And I thought maybe it'd be fun to share that with people who may never have heard of these things and love costumes like you do.
Oh, well, it's so crazy to have gone from having this full-time job in newspapers and magazines and then go to having this collection of part-time jobs that all revolve around sewing. Mm-hmm. But it's just been so fun to sort of explore these things that I didn't get to do when I was younger. And I've always been interested in costuming. As long back as I can remember, I've always loved costumes and dress up, and my mom always made Halloween costumes for me and things like that. And as an adult, I've sort of just been in the right place at the right time and had the opportunity to work on some short films where I've done some wardrobe work and some on-set work, but then also to get dressed up in costumes and go hang out with other people who are dressed up in costumes. And it's one of those things that you just kind of go, okay. And some people either kind of get it, or some people just kind of look at you like you have two heads.
Yeah.
But there's one of the largest pop culture conventions that takes place here in Atlanta every Labor Day weekend. It's called Dragon Con. It is a sci-fi fantasy sort of pop culture convention that revolves around those themes. And it's around, I don't know, 45, 50,000 people come, mm-hmm. and they attend, and they go attend panels about different TV shows and movies and books and things like that. And a lot of people come and dressed up in costumes. And I would say probably some of the most talented seamstresses and tailors that I've ever seen in person are mm-hmm. Cosplay Fast. Cosplay is a portmanteau of costume play.
Okay, yeah.
And it's about making costumes that are replicas of things from TV, anime, manga, movies, and things like that. And it's just some of the level of detail in these costumes just kind of blows you away. I got to judge a costume contest for the young adult literature track at Dragon Con last year, and one of the entrants had Princess Bride costume that she had made, mm-hmm. and it was, I mean, just perfect down to the last detail. And yeah. you see Hunger Games costumes and old-time Star Trek costumes, and it's just really a great weekend. It's kind of like going to the high school reunion that was all the people you wish you'd had to hang out with when you were in high school.
I just think it's fascinating. You know, with Downton Abbey, I think there's a whole group of quilt makers who got very interested in the outfits and the clothing. And even at one of the trade shows a couple years back, they had in the costumes from the show. And the picture that you sent to me was one that I interpreted as looking a little bit more Victorian, except that it's white and powder blue. But, you know, it looks like something you know, what do you call that outfit that from the picture you shared?
It's a neo-Victorian snow queen. So it's they're actually it's patterns that are replicate Victorian era garments. Only I did them in non-traditional Victorian colors. And although I have to say, in Atlanta, Labor Day weekend, it's often in the 90s.
Yes.
So to have that's about 20 yards of fabric in that costume plus a wig.
Yeah,
I was really, really hot.
Yes,
I was kind of miserable toward the end of the day, and had to actually strip down to just the undergarments.
Yeah,
to be able to get back to my car because I just couldn't.
Couldn't
handle anymore, and it's still a lot of clothes because we're talking Victorian era undergarments. But
right,
my husband was like, "I can't believe you're doing this." I'm like, "Well, you know, this is as far as I can go."
Oh, well, you know, just part of the costume. You just tell people, no, this is it. This is the costume. We have like about a minute, Mary. What is your, you know, you've gone and you've actually done, talked on the word doesn't come back. You've sat on a presentation panel, that's the word, at Dragon Con. What do you talk about on that?
I have the best thing ever is I get to be an attending professional at Dragon Con, which is I'm officially there as part of the convention, and I get to sit on panels and talk about sewing. and this year I'm talking about sewing for 6 hours over the course of the weekend. I get to talk about some Victorian and Edwardian costuming because I'm also a huge Downton Abbey fan, Rococo and Regency, and then pattern drafting, pattern hacking, so combining existing commercial patterns to make them look like something you want. And it's just a lot of fun. I'm really fortunate that there's some great directors involved, the Lee Cox Query, the costuming track, Enrique with the alternate history track have both been just wonderful to have me back at the convention and let me come in and talk. And over the course of the weekend, I probably get to dabble about sewing to about 1,000 people or more.
Well, Mary, this has been
amazing.
I really appreciate it.
Oh, thank you so much for having me, Pat. It's been a blast.
Thank you so much. We'll be right back, everybody.
An issue of Quilts and More magazine at your local quilt shop or on newsstands.
This quilting tip brought to you by Moda Fabrics. Visit modafabrics.com or your local quilt shop to see the latest fabric collections. To maintain consistency when piecing, keep your eye on the spot where the needle enters the fabric, not the needle going up and down.
Hi, I'm Linda Augsburg, Executive Editor of American Patchwork and Quilting, and I'd like to invite you to join me in making pillowcases and creating smiles. For people who love to sew or quilt, it's so easy to lift spirits and bring smiles to hospitalized kids, homeless families, and others in need. Simply join American Patchwork and Quilting Magazine's 1 Million Pillowcase Challenge. Make 1, 2, or more pillowcases and donate them in your local community. You'll create just as many smiles. Join the movement today. Find complete details, download free patterns, and record your donations online at allpeoplequilt.com/million pillowcases.
See what other quilters are up to on the American Patchwork and Quilting page on Facebook. Simply go to facebook.com and search for APQ Magazine.
Welcome back to American Patchwork and Quilting's podcast. I'm your host, Pat Sloan, and there is one thing that we sew with that I think a lot of us could learn more about, and today we will. I have Rhonda Pierce here, who is the marketing director at Schmetz Needles, because the needle in our machine is so important, and I think many of us just sit down and start zooming along and don't know enough about it. So, Rhonda, thank you for being here.
Oh, thank you. I'm tickled to be here.
You know, I'm so glad that you bumped into me at the trade show and we were able to make this happen, because I think needles are one of those, it's like buying tires, you know, people just don't really think too much about it. but it's way more important to what we're doing, right?
Absolutely. Well, here's the thing, you know, sewing machine needles, they're not glamorous, they're not sexy, and they're not romantic, but you absolutely need them for your quilt making.
You know, when I first started, I was lucky enough that people recommended Schmidt's needles somewhere, you know, in my very early, like, first days after they let me use my machine, because I had to start by hand first quilt making. even though I owned a machine, I wasn't allowed to use it. But somebody told me, well, you know, buy, these are the best. And so that's always really what I've used. How long have you been with the company?
Well, I've been with the company for almost 9 years, and Smith's has actually been in business and making sewing machine needles since 1851. So I think they know what they're doing.
Yes. Oh my gosh. Yeah. They're just, it's just amazing. So I want to talk, I want to do some details, get some information to people. What can they find at the website so they can go download it?
Okay, sure. First of all, the website is smetsneedles.com. That's smetsneedles, all one word, .com.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And that's our consumer site. And we have lots of information there. We hope that quilters are buying their needles from their local shops. But, mm-hmm. you know, you need more information. So they can go to the website and click the Learning Center.
Okay.
And there's a little drop-down menu, and you can click all about needles, and there's probably more information there about needles than you ever wanted to know. But let me just point out one really great handout. If you scroll all the way down, and it says Smith's Needle Guide PDF. Mm-hmm. And on that little flyer, you can print it out on a regular 8.5 by 11 sheet of paper, and it's got needle anatomy, it's got the new color bands, and it talks about the different types of needles that are available for quilting and home sewing. So it's very useful.
Wonderful. Okay, so let's talk some details. What do quilters need to know about the needle they use for quilting? What are like the top three things we need to know?
Sure. Well, the universal needle is probably the most popular, and just as the name suggests, you can use that for your piecing and for your quilting and lots of other sewing. But Smith's makes over 15 different types of needles, so I think, you know, there are options. Mm-hmm. There's the quilting needle, which has a tapered point. It comes in two different sizes, a 75, which is really good for the actual piecing, and a size 90, which is a great size for the actual quilting of the project.
Okay, so can I ask you on the quilting one, what is mm-hmm. the difference between that? You said it was a little sharper, but what's the benefit of a quilting over the universal for a quilt maker?
You know, it has, the universal has a more rounded point or mm-hmm. tip. So it's just like the name suggests, it will stitch through all kinds of fabrics. But mm-hmm. with the quilting needle, they've tapered the point mm-hmm. and made it a little bit sharper to penetrate the cotton fibers that a lot of us quilt on. So it's okay. a little bit different stitch quality, and also a little bit difference in the actual experience while you're quilting.
Okay. And then the other one is that quilt makers, I think, hear about is the Microtech, right?
The Microtech. Yeah, that little needle is really growing in favorability by quilters. And in fact, it's my favorite go-to needle. Mm-hmm. What's special about the Microtech needle is, again, the point. And they refer to that as an acute slim point. So it's mm-hmm. almost kind of fragile. It's very an extreme tapered point.
Mm-hmm.
Initially, that needle was designed for microfibers that were so popular a couple decades ago, but quilters picked it up and they found out that they got a very clean, precise stitch. You can use a very small size, like a 60, for piecing, and go all the use a size 90 or 100 for the actual quilting.
Okay.
One thing I want to mention about needles is fabrics have different dyes and finishes. If Microtex size 80 is your go-to needle for piecing, your needle might react a little bit different to some of your different types of quilting fabric. So I recently had that experience, and I had to drop down to a size 70. So, you know, you just need to be aware and not be afraid to change needle types or sizes.
Now, when you realized that something wasn't working exactly like you wanted, was it skipping stitches, or what happened?
Well, I was using a Microtex size 80, and my fabric was actually going down into the throat plate. And I thought, well, that's weird. It was a fresh needle.
Yeah.
So I put another fresh needle in, and the same thing happened. And so then I went down one size to the size 70, and then, you know, it just stitched
fixed it
like butter. Yep.
Yeah. Ah, okay. All right. So then the other, you talked about the color coding on the needle. Tell us about that.
Sure. You know, needles don't change very much. But in 2014, color coded needles were made available. And there's two bands of color right on the shoulder of the needle. The top color band indicates the needle type, and the lower band of color identifies the size of needle. Now, there is an exception, and that's with the universal needle, and it has only one band of color, and that is to identify the size.
Okay.
So that's huge.
Yeah. It's wonderful. I love anything color-coded. I'm like all over it. That's like my favorite thing. Okay, so I want to skip around here because I want to ask the question everybody in the world asks. How often do we change our needle?
Woohoo, I'm so glad that you asked.
I know. Imagine that.
Well, when I teach classes, there's usually a few people that look at each other saying, really? Change your needle? What are you talking about? First of all, the needle is not a permanent part of your sewing machine, and it is meant to be changed. And changed before you break it or sew over a pin. So there are some clues to when you need to change your needle. An easy one to identify is when your thread is breaking or it's shredding. Have you experienced that before?
Yes.
If your stitches become kind of wiggly, squiggly, or you're kind of losing control over your stitches, or your stitches are actually skipping, that's a clue you need to change the needle. Or if it's really bad, you will be damaging your fabrics, or your fabric might actually be puckering. So those are good clues. The other clue is your machine will be making a little clicking sound.
Yes.
Or if you're not listening closely enough, it'll start to pop, or even worse, make a clunking sound. So, you know, we hope it doesn't come to that. But, you know, needles don't last forever, so you need to change your needle.
Do you find that, is there any, I know there isn't like a hard and fast because, you know, you can't say after so many hours because nobody tracks that. Will you find that like batting will wear the needle down faster than just piecing? Like when you go from machine quilting to just piecing?
You know, I like to think of it as a dance. It's a dance between the needle, the thread, the fabric, and you, the leader. And, you know, sometimes the finishes of the fabric will dull the needle a little bit more. Sometimes when we quilt or piece, we might tug or pull at our fabric a little bit, and that kind of rubs away at the tip of the needle. So, you know, it's very individualistic. Changing the rule of thumb is to change the needle every 8 hours. For some people, maybe that's too often. Maybe it's 20. The most I've ever heard of was a power quilter, and she confided in me that she changes her needle every 3 hours. So
wow.
I don't think she's the norm, though.
No. But that popping sound is really one of my personal indicators. I can I can hear when it doesn't sound the same as it did before, and then I'm like, okay, time to do it.
Yeah, and it kind of depends on the machine too. One of my machines actually, it just starts to make that little clicking sound.
Yeah, so we have about maybe a minute, a little less than a minute. Can you just give me a brief on these the size of the needle, the eye, you know, like the bigger number, the smaller number, what do we have to look for?
Sure. Well, the smaller the number, such as a size 60, that's the smallest needle size that you can find for home sewing, and then it moves up to size 120. That would be the largest size of needle. Then I'll also just mention that the eyes of the needle also change. So the embroidery, the metallic, and the top stitch needles all have larger eyes. And that's something to keep in mind when you're having trouble with threads breaking or you're sewing at really high speeds.
Yeah. Perfect, perfect, perfect. And the charts and everything out there are going to help people. And you have a newsletter, too.
I do have a monthly newsletter, and they can go to smetsneedles.com, and on the right-hand side, they'll see a little box to sign up for the newsletter, and I always include a needle tip. It comes out once a month, and it's free.
Yeah, I think it's perfect. I just, I really think you do a fantastic job, Rhonda.
Thank you. Thank you. It's fun. You know, I love the industry that we work in, and I love all the creativity, so... it's always a joy to see all the quilts and then talk to the artists and the consumers.
Well, I appreciate you bringing us some wonderful needle information, Rhonda. Thanks.
You're welcome. And I'll just remind your listeners to change your needle.
Yeah. There you go. This is a... I'm Pat Sloan for American Patchwork and Quilting's podcast. We are here just about every week of the year and have lots of prior shows you can go download. You can visit allpeoplequilt.com and see the quotes that I pull out from each of my guests and search. You can search on the guest name and find out when they were on the show. You can also go to my site, to patsloan.com, and I have a link that shows you all the guests that I have talked to. So if you're looking for somebody in particular, sign up for everybody's newsletters, because who doesn't like to get mail in your email? And I'll see you next week.
Remember to visit allpeoplequilt.com for more information on topics from today's show, as well as how-to videos, free printable patterns, and additional tips and techniques. Thanks for listening.